When you have to stop but don't really want to, stop at BP. Because BP has everything you need to keep it going. Fuel to keep the adventures going. The BP Me app to keep the savings and the commutes going. Snacks and drinks to keep the crew going. And the BP Me Rewards Visa to keep the rewards going and going and going. A stop at BP isn't a stop at all. Keep it going.
We, in our production set, can promise you a very long discussion that you probably should have quit halfway through. But hey, we do it.
We deliver.
We deliver. We promise as much as we can deliver. What's the big topics we want to go to for our video prep? Could be different for other booktubers out there have to write scripts. Our goal is to get Sanderson, and we've yet to do that. So, I hate that phrase, fake it till you make it. I don't think that's good advice. Welcome back, everybody, to another Two to Ramble episode. I'm one of your hosts, Austin.
And I'm your other host, Richard.
We are discussing today on BookTube, whether you're listening to us on Spotify, Apple Pods, YouTube, we're talking about how we created a BookTube channel, why we created a BookTube channel, and the hopes from this video. Rich, what do you hope to get out of this? Why do we want to be here and discuss our BookTube journey?
Well, inspired a little bit by Bookborn's video talking about her challenges and just kind of the behind-the-scenes stuff with BookTube monetarily and comments and just the process of making them.
Yeah, she has a fantastic video.
Fantastic. Better video than ours.
Link in the description for there.
We also got several comments from different people, like Vera on our Discord, on our Patreon. She asked us questions about YouTube, and this kind of not the only person. So we've gotten DMs from other people. So we wanted to make a video to ask them not necessarily how you should make a YouTube channel or a BookTube channel, but this is how we did it. And so you can look at why we did it. What are the pros and cons of starting it? Should you start your own channel? How we got started? What was our equipment? What was and is our software that we use?
Video creation process.
How we come up with the idea, going through to editing and advertisement, especially early on. Shorts. What's the plan with that? And then lastly, money. What do we make? Where does our money come from? And we're going to show that with all with you.
And I wish that when we started, we had some video like this to emulate or just get information off of. So I'm hoping that this will be helpful to somebody out there, whether you're looking to do a BookTube channel, a regular channel, or just pursue something. I think we'll have tidbits that
this will be a mix of general YouTube experience, I guess, the just general YouTube knowledge, and also a bit more specifically on BookTube. Because some small differences, and I do wish we had when we were first starting a BookTube specific channel on some stuff to keep in mind.
Yeah,
this is not looking up a YouTube video on how people started a tech YouTube channel. A little different. It's very not different. Exactly the same, and you can't follow those steps exactly. So I'm hoping this will be helpful to the future Three to Ramble channel, you know?
Nice. I think this would be very important too for authors, indie authors who create books but don't have a presence online. Sure. Because there are a bunch of indie authors who kind of get stuck and then don't know how to market themselves, and maybe there's some information or something we can get out here that the YouTube, the BookTube realm and everything to do with producing content is different than like a creative project. Mm-hmm. So it involves creativity, but there's more than that, because I think a tough time for authors today is getting yourself known or out there. Like, hey, if you have a book, how do you get that out to people?
Honestly, you either make the best book ever and it travels by word of mouth, which, I mean, that is primary. Try and make the best book you can. But having a strong presence online is vitally important nowadays.
It is. And we actually have some plans for the future episodes. We've recorded one tidbit so far to feature indie authors on here. That'll be very cool.
I'm excited.
Very cool. Shout out to Tanner. His book's right here, Titan's Nest.
Free advertisement, by the way. Just throwing it in there. I have read the book, and so waiting on the review because he hasn't read it yet. He's holding us back. But Titan's Nest by T.D. Orell, Tanner. Pick up the book. It's actually really good. It's a Dragon Rider series. I'm kind of going off topic, but I just wanted to...
No, well, we will throw that in the description below along with all of our equipment we announce here, along with the software we use, and this book by Tanner. He's the best. And we're going to, just for a future reference as well, go talking about this, because whether that you're watching this video the day of or years from now, we're nearing 28,000 subscribers on YouTube, TikTok at 75-something thousand, but we have presence on Spotify, Apple, but mainly our measure of how much we're growing is on YouTube. We're almost at 28,000.
And we've been on YouTube now, or started our channel about just over 2 years.
Yes. So if this is helpful to you now, watching in the future, we're going to go through all this stuff, starting with Rich.
Should you start a channel?
Should you, Rich?
I don't know. 2 years in, should we?
You should do it with the right people. Is we're too far deep to.
I'm gonna like slip in a little something. My mother called me saying she heard one of our jokes and saying like, "Oh, we're gonna stop at 17, like episode 175 something," and she's like, "Oh, that's good." And we're like, "I was like, good,
it's good.
Like, you want us to stop?" She's like, "Yeah, you should probably stop. You have other things you can do with your time."
She said that?
Yeah.
Oh, it's so hurtful, but so nice.
No, and she's like, "Hey, you're spending a lot of time on this. Want you to do other, like, is it taking up too much of your time?" And we're talking. Yeah. But I thought it was funny.
That's funny.
My mom has no filter.
Your mom also has provided us with some great video ideas and content.
Oh, she has.
She's a great ass. She was a day one fan.
Oh, yeah. She's watched, I think, nearly every video.
That's so nice. And, but yeah, so should you start a channel?
People are going to be around you and say, "Oh, no, it's not worth it." But it's all up to you on what you actually want to do with your time.
There were recent videos, Johan, Library of a Viking, released this video, other people have, of booktubers quitting. Mm-hmm. And you'll see other people of, hey, book the bad things, the comments, there's the bad side, which we'll talk about the pros and cons. But I have a personal little philosophy I just created. Mm-hmm. The laws, the four P's of Austin I just created.
Austin's P's?
Austin's P's.
Okay.
And this goes for booktube, but also general things of hobbies, because when you're deciding what to do with your time, at least when I'm deciding what to do with my time, is a better way of putting it.
Sure.
Of you have to do certain things in life. You have to do laundry, you have to work, you have to do certain things. You have to eat, you have to drink. When it comes to a thing you're doing for a fun endeavor, that's the point is what to fill in with free time. The four P's, the laws of the four P's defining happiness for Austin's life. I got it down to passion, perseverance, probability, and perspective. And what I just mean by those...
Break each of those down for us.
I'll break those down, because if you're going to look to do a booktube channel, the very first thing, what are you passionate about in the book space? Is it talking, reviewing books? Is it, do you love the editing? Is there something in that sphere? The video creation process, is it something about marketing yourself? Is there something there that you're passionate about?
You don't have to be passionate about the entire process either.
No.
Just
there's plenty we aren't.
Yeah, sure. There's a lot of work that it takes to actually do the thing you really like.
Yes.
And that's everything. You're not going to love every part of every process.
And as long as you like love enough of it, there's some drive there if you're doing it for a reason. Why are you putting yourself online? Why are you doing that?
Yeah.
If you just like reviewing books, then just find other, like talk to a friend who reviews books with you. Is it, you want to find a community because you don't have people to talk to with books? Oh, okay. Communities you're passionate about, or you're passionate about you're passionate about creating videos in a succinct manner that's informative and going, here's it. Bookborn is a fantastic idea or a fantastic channel with all four of the book content. Yeah. What were you saying there?
One of our reasons is we wanted something like a video archive of our thoughts on books over time.
Yep.
So that when we look back years from now, we can remember what we thought about a book where, you know, even now it's close to on over 3 years since I've read Mistborn, or close to about same thing with The Way of Kings. I can look back on our very first video and then one of our more recent ones, but that's been over a year ago when we reviewed The Way of Kings.
Yeah.
And I now can find out what my thoughts are on that series. And that's a really interesting, it's expanding my memory into the internet.
And it's you preparing for those episodes, and if you prepare, you know.
If I prepare.
You preparing them, talking about that kind of confirms into memory what you love or dislike about the book, and then us going back and forth, it kind of solidifies and we learn a little bit more about, why do we think this?
Yeah. to be fair, a lot of my process of thinking, I think out loud.
Yeah.
I like talking through my problems, and often I have a question in my head that I can't answer, and so I have to speak it aloud, and as soon as I do,
I figure out the answer. No, it's I answer it for you, Rich.
Yes, I...
It's all right here.
Take the questions, take the answers, and then put them back in. Yeah, I get it.
But the passion part, simple enough, like, what do you love about it? Why are you doing this with your free time? You don't have to do BookTube. You don't have to do many things. No. Now, here's where the second P, the perseverance part, comes, is... there's going to be lots of things that you don't like in the space. And the perseverance will be very important when it comes in those first several months of, hey, if you're looking to form a community, you're not going to get a community for months, maybe years.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Like, I think you should anticipate first 6 months minimum. It's going to suck. It's going to feel like you're shouting into the wind. That's just kind of how it is. And if you can't persevere through that, maybe don't start.
And there's ways to help. There's ways you can firm your, you can mold your environment to make the perseverance easier. Like with Rich and I, when we were getting no views and nobody watched, at least I could look forward to discussing a book with Rich. And yeah, it was you and I doing something together that kept us through. Now what keeps me going are the comments and I don't care about you. Now yeah, I just go, it's like, but that does what keeps us going then and now is, yeah, regardless of what happens. There's something that kept us going.
No matter what, I still have a fun conversation with a friend about a book I'm interested in reading.
It's never a waste of time.
Exactly.
And so that you can make your environment better so you can persevere, but just know there's going to be a lot of stuff that you might hate. You might not like editing. And there's things you can do to make your channel or make this whatever hobby you're picking, do the things you like less. Like Matt's fantasy book reviews, for example, really hates editing. So what he does, he puts a camera up. As soon as he finishes a book, he then talks right to the camera what his thoughts are. His editing process is like 10 minutes. Nothing. Because he hates editing. Great.
And you know
what? And he has a super successful channel.
It works great for him.
Yes.
So you do not have to follow what someone else does. You find the thing that makes it work for you. So figure out what exactly is you're most passionate about and try and go for that. If you really do like the editing process, maybe focus on that. Mm-hmm. For us, we really like the conversation. We wanted to have more conversations and put them on the internet. So that's the focus.
That's it.
Editing is kind of neat for us to like try and figure out, but that's not the passion. So that's not what we focus on.
And so the perseverance part comes with, hey, when you have to edit stuff or you have to do the uploads and everything in the background and social media, which is horrible. But
social media is horrible.
The social media
part. But it's essential.
It's essential to this whole thing.
And there are ways to make social media not suck as much.
Absolutely.
What sucks about social media is the doom scrolling. If you can avoid that, social media is pretty cool.
Definitely.
Basically.
And yeah, if you can avoid that, and also when we're going to go in pros and cons shortly about the BookTube space, and comments is one of those. But I just want to finish off with these other two, which is perspective. What I mean by perspective is if you are looking at your channel as you're growing and comparing yourself to everybody above you, you're always and below you, including below you. If you're comparing yourself to other people all the time, you're going to feel like a failure, or you're going to gain an ego. It goes one of two ways. So you can obviously, it's good to know what's going on to gauge and to know, like, am I doing something right? But if you can look at it with a more unbiased face, that is good. Because, Rich, do you agree with that generally of comparing yourself to yesterday is a better idea than comparing yourself to the supermodel on Instagram?
It's certainly better. However, I guess I take it a little bit more mixed of, I do like looking at examples of other people to see if I'm on the right track. If it took someone a year, like from starting their channel and similar conditions, as I follow someone that's kind of similar to us in their style, in their content genre, and they have double the subscribers than I do in the same amount of time, be like, okay, why is that? It's got to be a reason. And I think that's relevant to look at others to see what are they doing well. And what can you maybe improve?
Exactly. Yeah, that's why
I don't think you should ignore everyone and just focus on yourself because
you're a bad sample size.
You are a bad sample size. You are not a finished product. There are always things that you can improve on, and you don't know what you don't know. So how do you know what you're not doing well at? Well, you look at other people. Like when we took a look at Talking Stories, YouTube channel went, man, we need to improve our lighting.
He's got great lighting.
Oh my God, he has fantastic lighting.
Yeah.
Oh God, I love his set. It's immaculate. So
immaculate set. Okay. Yeah, that's why I was caveating that with, if you can look at others with an unbiased face of going, like, look at them to emulate others as well, not to compare yourself in just a numbers game and get you super set and making yourself self-defeating or gain that ego. And that's a great point to make with, you're doing this for a reason, so how can you improve? Yeah. What can you do better? I mean, it would make no sense if you're a writer and don't read books.
Yeah, honestly, a very simple thing about YouTube, and I think this applies to every single YouTube channel, no matter what type of content you're doing. If you're speaking, one of the things to improve is, how do you speak in public? How do you speak on camera? It's a simple, simple thing. If you're watching your video and you're saying, but, likes, all these filler words, that's something to improve on. Try and reduce the amount of times you say that and make your point a little clearer. I'm not a great public speaker, but I'm certainly better than I was when we first started, because watch some of the videos, go, oh, I don't like how I sounded that way. And trying to focus on how I do inflection of my words. These are just kind of an example of, you're not a finished product. Take a look at what you're doing and how you can improve.
That's great. Yeah. Perspective on looking back. Oh, I was so bad then. How can I improve to now? Mm-hmm. Good. Yes. And then the last thing is probability. And the probability meaning you probably won't make it.
Sure.
You probably will fail a lot of the time unless you persevere long enough. But the probability is against you. And like for us, we're talking, I'm not talking this like we made it in that sense. I'm saying the probability of things, of the probability of you being a successful author, the probability of you winning the jackpot, the probability of all these things. You shouldn't go in with a numbers game of it's going to be guaranteed. But understand that there's ways to increase your odds. But there's always a tinge of luck involved. There's always another factor that outside of yourself that's involved. Just do what you can that you can control. But don't expect anything from others. Don't expect like you.
Oh, now that you're talking on something that's vitally important. Nobody owes you views. Nobody owes you their time of day on YouTube. Every view that we get is a view that we deserve. And we deserve nothing more and nothing less. There is no weird algorithm. Like, there's an algorithm, but the algorithm is just showing people what they want. That's all it is. When people say, oh, yeah, the algorithm didn't favor me, what that's saying is people didn't want to click on my video, and or people clicked on my video and didn't watch enough of it and weren't and didn't want to watch the whole thing. That's all it is. So don't demand views. Earn them. So that's, I don't know. I've seen that often enough of people complaining about how, you know, they deserve more views and things like that. I don't think so. People get the views that they deserve.
And it's a self-defeating attitude of, if you feel like you deserve more, you won't feel like you need to improve to earn those views. Mm-hmm. So if you're setting yourself up like that, like I think we're in total agreement. If you're setting yourself up like that, you're not going to get the thing you need because it's a self-defeating prophecy. You're self-fulfilling prophecy and I deserve more. I'm perfect the way I am. Why are people not giving me things?
Yeah.
That's never a good way to go about life. Yeah. So those are my four P's. I just want to say that's more general stuff, but we can go into pros and cons of, and Rich, I want to pick your brain, especially on what you think the biggest pro is of the BookTube space. What do you think is the big benefit? If should people start, what did you get out of this whole thing?
Number one, community. 100%. The biggest, I get, it's not an issue, it's not a problem, but my biggest detractor while reading books, especially by myself, was I had very little people to talk to, or I had to go on Reddit, and chatting on like a Reddit board is not that fun about books. Like it just doesn't work the same. And then I slowly convinced some of my roommates to read it. And that's fun. I had a conversation or two with them about the book after they finish. And then that's about it. But I can't get them to read every single book that I've read. The biggest benefit I've had from this is not only with comments, but also our Patreon and talking with people in our Discord has been so rewarding for me. I can't stress how cool this is. Of literally every book I read, I can talk with people about it that have most likely read it, and we could read things together. I never have to read a book alone. Ever. Ever again. I never have to do that.
Amazing.
I didn't know that that's what I was really missing. I really miss that. I like reading books with other people.
Yeah.
And that's an amazing thing that I can always hop on our Discord and say, hey, I read this book, or I'm about to read this book. You, anyone want to read it with me? We'll talk about it in 2 weeks or something.
And that's so needed for books, because if you watch a movie, there's so many people that watch the movie. Mm-hmm. You could talk about anybody with that big blockbuster that comes out. But then niche down to books, you got to find those people. You need the internet for that.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of people that are watching us right now, I bet, are watching our reviews and other things like that because they don't have someone to listen and talk to in real life about the book they finished.
Yeah, they want to know if, hey, am I the only one that thought this about some book?
And then they watch us and go, wait, I still disagree. I still need to find somebody. Then they go to the real BookTubers.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Find somebody better.
The Matt's Fantasy
Reviews. The Mikes. The Bookborns. Just list all of them. The Petricks.
The Daniels.
Yeah, all those. So that's your biggest benefit. And 100%. What are some side benefits before we get into cons?
Oh, side benefit is mainly talk with you and kind of learning how to talk about books and actually improve my thoughts. So oftentimes, if you just read a book by yourself, you read the book and then it disappears and it's gone. And oftentimes, you don't remember it. The fact that I actually have, when I read a book, I have to formulate my thoughts, think about it, ruminate. The book sits with me a lot longer.
That is a fair thought, because before our channel started and I would read books, it's so hard for me to remember my opinion on those books. I can remember a general feeling, mm-hmm. but now every time we review something, every book we've reviewed on this channel, I have a very firm remembrance and memory of, oh, yeah, I definitely thought this.
Yeah, it's something similar to you learn better if you write it down. Like,
yeah.
Write what you've learned, teach what you've learned, and you will remember it better. It's kind of like remembering, memories can often fade, but oftentimes you can remember remembering a memory.
Yes.
And that's how that memory can stay alive. Like, I have several memories from really early childhood, like when I was about a year old, that I remembered when I was like 6, and then I re-remembered again at 12.
Right.
And I've kept that going, that I can remember like the feel of black sand on the bottoms of my feet when I was roughly a year old in Turkey. And I have that. I don't have the memory, the actual memory. I have the memory of a memory of a memory.
Right.
Something similar, but apply the same logic to books, and that's a really great benefit to it.
Just seals it into your head. Mm-hmm. And that's, you can remember that from when you're 1 year old. Yeah. 1 year old.
I wow. Even have a memory around 2 years old of my dad is holding me and singing me some stupid song.
Not probably a drinking singer. Song.
Yeah. And I remember the scene of like standing in the living room on his back, looking at the wall at this painting that we have. And my thought was, why won't he put me down? Like, why am I still here? Like, can you please put
me down? You sure that's a real memory, not a false memory?
I'm pretty sure. It's like, I had a odd thought of like, please put me down.
You were sentient at 2.
Words are not it, but I was feeling of displeasure,
yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
I wanted to go down.
You're enunciating the feeling that you couldn't say out loud when you were 2. I'm just imagining 2-year-olds like, put me down, father. You're like Alia from Dune. Just super sexy. It's Alia, right? That was her character?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, again, it's the same thing of I remembered that memory at 7.
Yeah.
And then carried it forward.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Do you have any other benefit? Because I'll toss one at you that I think is very cool as well.
Go ahead.
Is that the connections you're allowed to make with having a more of a platform with
certainly
other BookTubers, people that we would have never met, like connections on the level of the in our Discord, Patreon people have become friends.
Yeah.
That is just people from the internet that we've now welcomed into our lives with, oh, holy crap, we discuss books, this is cool, would have never met you before. But then to the other aspect, which is other authors we would have never been able to talk to before. Or people...
We interviewed Brian McClellan. Like, I've read a book that I've read, I actually get to have our own interview with an author
I've
read.
It's so cool.
That's so neat.
Yes. And other niche aspects, like Lynn Morehouse, someone who is starting a publishing company. So cool to like pick his brain in that stuff. An audiobook narrator. Mm-hmm. And indie authors, like Stephen Guglich. We were talking to him, having all these opportunities to pick brains on people. And it's just the best because we can get access to people we would never would have been able to before. So that's a really cool benefit.
Definitely.
And you want to get into the cons, the dark side.
Sure.
Of this whole scheme.
I guess the biggest con is the...
Wait. I have one more positive.
Okay.
One more positive.
We still got positives?
I don't want to let this go.
Okay.
The whole thing for the BookTube channel is it pushes and it makes reading a lot more fun in that regard. Of like, I just want to say, yes, the whole thing of talking about the books, but it makes it so that reading feels also productive. It's a great feeling of reading's not just a hobby. I could be like, it's work. I'm reading for the job.
Oh. Go away. I have reading to do. It's vitally important that I finish this book by Saturday.
Exactly. But realistically, like we have to record it a month from now. But that's the last thing.
It does feel good.
It feels great.
It feels good that our... Like, my hobby is now a productive hobby.
Monetize the hobby.
Great.
Wonderful. Yeah. So, go con. Sorry, what we were just about to say on a big con there.
The time. It takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
A lot of sleepless nights.
A lot of time.
You more so than me, but
it's a lot
of record late. I mean,
it's tough for both. And
for different reasons.
Yeah, for different reasons, tough for both, and it takes a bunch of time, and... that comes with the whole perseverance part of, is it worth enough of the passion? Do you want to do it enough? But also, you got to go far enough to be like, okay, first reach a level of where you think you get comfortable and, this is what BookTube will be like. This, get an idea of what the day-to-day is. And if it's too miserable for you, there's a point. Quitting is not a bad thing in all regards.
Or tailoring it. Don't box yourself into like, I have to do this or else it's not worth doing. You can change.
You don't have to do anything. Not here.
I think Matt's Fantasy Book Reviews is probably the best example of...
Yeah.
He uploads when he wants. There's no set schedule. It just... He does it when he wants to. There's no chains on him.
Right.
For us, we've decided to put... We pushed ourselves into a box of, no, we are releasing an episode Mondays and Fridays. And we stick to it.
Yeah.
And that's a chain on us. That's a...
Yep, we have
a constraint that we have put voluntarily on ourselves for it. But again, it's voluntary.
We could stop.
Yeah, we could.
We could anytime. Who knows? Maybe after this.
Well, we won't.
No, we won't. But it takes a lot of time. That's one of the big detractors of how much of your free time will this take. You can play around with it to make it take less, but if you want it to get it to a certain place, if in mind you have a goal that you're setting, the more time you're going to need to put into it.
There's typically no real holidays exactly. Like, there's no weekends. Weekends are most of your time to actually get things done if you got a full-time job. So, yeah, it can be like going 6 months straight of most of your weekends going to this hobby. Yeah, that can be draining.
A lot of our weekends, too, is sometimes like we've had to not cancel weekend plans or not do things on the weekend because, well, we need to record, we need to do something for the channel, something outside that where it just takes some time. But, hey, we love doing it, too. So it's not a complaint. It's more so just a fact of the matter.
Yep. And if you'd rather do something else at the time, then there you go.
There you go. Now, another one to look at is social media and comments in general, which comments for us, I think, is different. We should mention it, though, because if you're going to make a platform, you're going to get strangers on the internet saying things. Mm-hmm. And so, Rich, what is your take on comments and your take on... Because we are in a different experience than other BookTubers and other people online.
Yeah.
Especially because of our audience, but also just, I don't think we get type of comments other BookTubers get. And also, we think about it differently, so it doesn't... It's not a huge detriment to us and our...
It's not a simple thing. It's
more complex. Yeah.
It's a multi-factor equation here. Of one, I don't I think most of our comments are generally positive. We have mostly positive comments.
Thanks to you all. Thanks so much.
I think part of that is due to our gender. So I think being a woman on YouTube, you're going to get different kinds of comments than men do. That's a factor you have to consider, because I think that's just kind of evident in seeing the comment section on this stuff. It's pretty brutal.
Yeah, Bookborn's video on it is great to look at. Vera from Vera from our Patreon as well similarly had this issue. So gender is a factor. Age is a factor.
Sure. Then you have to factor in we're doing books. We're not doing politics, which means generally people are pretty positive here. If we don't like someone's favorite book, like, are they going to be super hostile to us? No, they're just going to disagree with us.
I saw a comment on one of our recent shorts on YouTube.
It said, that's where the negative comments are. That's you want to find the negative two to ramble comments. Go to TikTok.
I was just scrolling because it shows us most recent comments on YouTube. It always shows you the most recent comment on whether the video was your first video published, 10th video is published, or the most recent. You're just seeing that new feed on the YouTube Studio app. And so one of the comments I saw was just, how can two people talk so nerdy and douchey at the same time? And I was like, oh, that's true, I guess.
It's pretty funny.
It's pretty funny.
That kind of leads us into how we see it. I do think we get less hateful comments or negative, not hateful. We get less negative comments on other people, I think. But the ones we do, I think we have a different perspective on it. I don't think comments bother us nearly as much. Often, and I think it used to bother me more. Not comments, but just the opinions of strangers would bother me a lot more many years ago. Things have changed. Now I value it far less. I value the opinions of close friends, and I've talked about it before, of if a random stranger's thoughts and opinions about me or something about what I said bothers me so much, that's more of a time to reflect on why, because I shouldn't care. If I do care, there's something about the comment or me that I need to address. Either they made a good point and I don't want to admit it and it hurts, or I'm insecure about something and they're touching on something I'm insecure about, so I have an emotional reaction. But often it can be as hateful, as mean as it is, but if I'm not insecure about it and I don't think there's any truth behind it and I'm pretty confident in what my opinion was, I don't care. They can say whatever they want and it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's definitely the healthy way of looking at it, of you should care about what your close family and friends say because they know you better.
Yeah.
And that should affect you more than, you know, when I say something to you, no effect whatsoever.
Absolutely not.
Equal to the stranger on the internet. Actually, a little less. You're like, oh, he's...
Well, that's the thing. The stranger could be right about other things. I know you're wrong all the time.
So take that as you will. But this is, again, being caveated with we don't... We're in the book space, so it's not super controversial. And also, because of gender, age, everything we're doing, we're not getting super awful comments. Sure, we get negative comments.
Yeah, sure.
We've read them. And
they're mostly funny to us.
They're mostly funny. And a lot of that is what perspective. So going into the book space, if you could put into your perspective of going, okay, this person doesn't know you at all. It doesn't say anything about your value. And I say that with, it's easier said than done, because I know Bookborn on her video, what she really is frustrated by, we had a collab with her, is being misunderstood. So even when it's something, your opinion on a book, like I can't lie, I've been a little, like there's been frustration when I would read a comment on one of the book reviews we do that says something like this about my opinion. I'm like, we agree. That's not what I said. But then, you know, that would be a whole conversation. Like it's just that human reaction of like, that's not what I said or meant. But then I reflect and go, okay, I got to illustrate my, I got to enunciate. I keep saying illustrate. I've got to, what's the word I'm looking for there? I've got to explain myself better.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's a lot of that. Sure. There's your 1% of people who are just awful and just completely contrarian, will never agree with you. So you're never here on BookTube or to anyone to people please and to conform to everybody, because conforming to everybody conforms to nobody. If you're trying to please everyone, you'll please no one. So just
be yourself.
And in a less corny way than that, of just staying, yeah.
Sure.
I don't like that cliche, be yourself, but it's a...
It's our view of comments. I know it's not unique, but it's also not the same as everyone else, and you'll probably have different experiences than us. But that's how we see it.
I'd say the last big con to bring up is, hey, there's with the time comes the grunt work, and also a lot of that early time on BookTube, you won't be noticed. You won't be getting the things that you had in mind of, you come here for the fun of wanting to talk about books, get something out of it. You might not get the thing you're looking for. Well, for a while.
It feels awful to spend hours and hours of time on something that you really thought is great, and then barely anyone sees it.
Yeah.
That hurts.
Yep.
That really hurts. The amount of hours put into it, and where you could do a better job promoting the video if you just walked around your house or walked around your work and showed people, and that would be more effective. That's when it's painful.
So when you put it that way, yeah. Yeah, very true.
But you just have to, grow some tough skin, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, weather it out, toughen up.
That's how we do it. Just our perspective of it. And it helps, again, putting yourself in an environment that makes it easier. So getting through the first couple months, gonna suck a bit. But then, Rich, how did we from the get-go get started? Let's get into how we actually made the BookTube channel, what we use, the behind the scenes of it. Remember our first day?
Yeah, basically it was like 3 a.m. at the kitchen table. Our failed pasta business, our failed dumpster rental.
This is real, by the way. This is a real story.
And we're going, man, life ain't looking too positive right now. We are just spiraling into doing nothing. We need to do something.
We graduated college, and what are we?
Yeah. And so we're sitting at a kid table, had like a 3-hour conversation about some book or another. And we're like, if Joe Rogan can talk about bullshit and things that he wants with people, why can't we do that? We just talked for 3 hours about a book, like not even a full book. Like we talked about like one character for 3 hours at the kitchen table. It's like, why don't we just put that on the internet? And then we did.
And the way that we did it, because before that, we'd always wanted to do something together. Mm-hmm. Whether there was a little pasta business called Impossibly Good. Best pasta name ever. We were going to sell pasta. We figured out there were a lot of food cottage laws or home cottage laws that prevented us from selling to other people and possibly poisoning them. We didn't want all that kind of legal work. There was the dumpster business where we were going to buy different pickup trucks or rent them out and then pick up dumpster stuff. And we were just looking at stuff. But then we said, why don't we do something we're passionate about? As passionate as I am about pasta,
Yeah.
I love pasta. So
he does.
Yeah. Too much. It's great. So with the whole book space here is the first day we did this, we went out and bought all the equipment first. We put in about $1,000 worth and just said, hey, we're getting all the things we need, which we're going to list out equipment and everything. Mm-hmm. But we got all the equipment we needed to do. So that was a sunk cost fallacy. We went, hey, too much money is in this for us not to do this for at minimum 3 months. And we shook hands.
Yep.
We're doing it for 3 months, one video a week. And the key factor in when we first started is promising to or guaranteeing we're going to do one video a week. We have to.
We set it to Monday video. Every Monday, video goes up at 8 a.m. And since we shook hands, have not missed a single day.
And now we're doing two.
Now we're doing two. We shook hands on the two.
Two a week now.
Two a week.
Oh, boy. Three's going to kill us. I don't want to do it. Because that's the thing, too, is measuring. Because we're doing two videos a week. It is manageable.
Yeah.
It's manageable. And I think we know our limits of like a third is pushing it. Third's pushing it. Especially, pushing. I don't even think people want to watch us three times a week.
Oh, 100%. That's three hours of content? No.
No one wants that.
No.
I wouldn't want that for them. Read books. Yeah. Only 2 hours a week is all you need from us.
Yeah.
That's it. A average-ish to long movie.
Strong word.
Yeah.
But I'll go into kind of what equipment we had.
Please.
We didn't buy the camera for the channel because you already had it for something else.
This was the only thing that we previously had, yes.
Yeah, so we have the Sony ZV-1 camera. It's the one we still use right now to this day.
Right there. We're looking at it.
We're looking at it.
That's been for over 2 years. That camera's been work.
Yeah. We bought crappier mics. I wouldn't recommend them. There are better mics to recommend. I will come up with a different one. There's other cheaper mics. But right now, we upgraded. We now have two Shure MV7X mics that are wired in with an XLR cable into a Zoom PodTrack P4. And all of this is recorded. So the camera is going into an external recorder, the Ninja 5 or the Ninja V external recorder and monitor.
And why is the main reason we need that?
So we created problems ourselves that we needed to then solve.
Yes.
Because it is a podcast and we're two people and we wanted multiple camera angles, but we didn't want to pay for multiple cameras and have to do the editing for that and kind of wire up and multiple blah. So we decided to get central widescreen and then zoom in to each of our faces or do split screen. So we can do a fake
multi-camera.
Fake multi-camera with one camera. But to do that, we need to record it in 4K because then when you zoom in, it won't look like dog shit.
If you zoom in on 1080, it's no longer 1080.
If you zoom in on 4K, it can be roughly 1080.
If you're super unfamiliar, this is all pixels, I mean the frames, and so it's just how clear is the picture.
Exactly. So, means we have to record in 4K. Recording on, so on our cheaper camera, you can only record for on 4K for maybe 15, 20 minutes at a time.
It overheats.
Overheats quite badly. Mainly just writing to an SD card, that amount of data doesn't work. So we needed to record it to something else. A cheaper option is if you have a decent computer, you can pass the camera into your computer and record on OBS. However, I did not have a great computer, or OBS hates us. And we had way too many times where OBS got corrupt, the file got corrupted, and happened way too many times.
Fun time.
That we said, screw it. I don't want to touch the computer as little as possible. I want to segregate the video creation process as much as we can.
Yep.
So we record it to this external recorder that can record 4K raw, well, slightly compressed. We ProRes 472. High quality footage that goes well with our editing software, Final Cut Pro.
And on, I just use a Mac. What's the basic version?
You have the MacBook Air.
MacBook Air, yeah. MacBook Air. So
M1 chip, though. So M1. It's pretty good.
Yep. And M1 chip, MacBook Air. It works functionally. I just want to mention we also have two lights that are shined on us right now.
Yeah.
They're two big lights, which everything will be in the description below that we use here so you can see the whole setup. Two lights. And then behind those lights are two kind of colored lights where you could see kind of a little bit of a shadow of blue on Richie's side and then a little bit of purplish on mine. You can't see it too well. We're going to improve the lighting. We're moving the set soon.
Yeah.
So we're kind of confined in our space. If you could see behind us, it's a bit of a mess. So
we've done
what we can in the space.
Yeah. Well, did what we can. And just the set that I built kind of limits us on where our camera can be.
Exactly.
There's a bunch of weird stuff about that, but I've learned a lot more that I am currently incapable of doing with our set. I'm excited to build a new one where the possibilities will be open to.
Oh, it's going to be fun.
Actually kind of stretch my video making skills. It'll be fun for me.
It'll be awesome. And so this will change in a little bit, but that's just how we're set up right now.
Yep.
And as far as the software we use StreamYard when we have the paid version for StreamYard to interview people, to have collabs that go on for over an hour because it gives a 1080 clip on their end. And we record on our own camera to get our side of things.
But this way, you know, when you're recording, if you're on a Zoom call and you have an internet interruption or something where the pixels get a little weird or you have an interruption or their mic cuts out for a second, recording that can get awkward or just unclean. You don't have to do this to start out, but recommend StreamYard's free option. They have a watermark on it, but you record at 720p and 720p.
Yeah.
But it's recorded locally on their end.
Yes.
So it looks a lot better than a final product. So highly recommend their service if you want to do online collaborations.
Yes. And we use on the editing software, I for the longest time used Final Cut Pro on here, but you can also use DaVinci Resolve. You can also use Adobe Premiere.
If you're using Mac, pick up Final Cut Pro. It's better to do that.
It's one-time payment.
iMovie. I think depending on how much editing you want to do, if you're just doing like straight talk to camera, no cuts, upload, maybe you could do iMovie. That's probably fine. Oh, definitely.
Even CapCut, which is completely free as well. CapCut is a great free software you can use. iMovie is a great one. There's free versions, I think, of DaVinci as well that you can use.
Well, that's the thing. If you're on PC, highly recommend DaVinci Resolve. It is completely free. There is a paid option that I don't even use for work. Like, I actually do some editing for work purposes. I don't need the paid version. You can get it if you like, but free works just great.
Absolutely.
I think the free version of DaVinci Resolve is nearly as good as Adobe Premiere. So, and the fact that you have to pay monthly or annually for Adobe's video editing software, skip it. Don't bother. Don't learn on that. Just get DaVinci. So that's the software.
DaVinci on PC, Final Cut Pro on Mac if you want to go with something, a really good editing software to pay for. You got iMovie or CapCut as well as options. And then as far as our thumbnails go, we
start with Canva.
Yeah, Canva, the free version is totally fine too. Canva free version, we upgraded the Pro eventually because there's a lot more you could do with it. But Canva is a great way to start there. And you can go beyond that. The new program we got we're toying around with is called Affinity.
Affinity is a Photoshop, Adobe like alternative where you actually pay for it once. It's a one-time payment instead of a subscription model, which I try and support if I can. I don't like supporting subscription models. Other than our Patreon.
Damn right.
Also Libro, but there's some subscriptions, but I feel wrong paying for a software that I should pay once, I think.
Kind of like monthly payments for an ebook.
Yeah.
You just want to purchase the ebook and have it forever.
Exactly.
I get you.
So there are exceptions to that rule, but I just don't like Adobe's practices outside of their payment.
Well, maybe you have a problem monthly paying for a product, but don't mind it with a service. Because that could be your difference. If it's a service that's being provided to you constantly, something that like month to month is being given to you, rather than like, why am I paying for something that I should just own? Is that kind of it?
Yeah, especially with, so Affinity does it in I think the right way of you pay for the software. There are some updates that come with it. Like they continually update it. However, eventually they will have a Affinity version 2 of it. And if they'll have a bunch of new updates, it'll be a bunch of new features. It'll be new piece of software. You can pay for that one if you want to upgrade. You don't have to, though. You can keep your old one. I think that's a more consumer-friendly business model. Instead of constantly paying $20, $50 a month for a program that doesn't get updated as often or crashes frequently, and maybe you don't use it that month, but you don't want to have to cancel your subscription.
Right.
Screw that noise.
But to go on the more expensive option, if you want top of top, there's Final Cut, DaVinci paid versions. There's Affinity paid version. But if you want to go in this all completely free, you can just do Canva free version. Does plenty for you online for thumbnails. And editing software could be iMovie or CapCut. Completely free.
Recording OBS is completely free. If you're doing it with someone on the internet, use StreamYard.
Yes.
Also free.
And then when it comes to the editing of video itself, what's worked for us and just the rule of thumb on content creation, the very first thing, Rich, that we learned quickly.
We didn't learn it quickly.
That we learned longly. We learned nothing quickly. We have to bash us in the head until the algorithm screams at us to go, you're doing something.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
Wrong.
Yeah.
So the first thing for us was the most important part of a video creation or anything you're doing online is going to be that first 30 seconds of a video to go. Here's what it would be. Okay, let me back up a little bit. You're seeing on this video, you see a thumbnail, you see a title, and then you click on the video. And the things to do is to look at that thumbnail and title, look for things that there's this rule of C's we've heard where it's, are there contrasting colors? Does it create conflict? Does it create curiosity? These kind of questions that you're throwing out. It's a good way to remember, like curiosity, conflict, contrast, these things.
Comparisons. Great on video is, you know, this better than this.
Yeah.
This is worse than that, and things like that. So
exactly,
if you look up like the C's of content creation, it kind of comes up. There's
a lot of better videos than what we're gonna say out there.
If you look at something like Think Media, has quite a few videos on thumbnail creation and titles. Great resource to look at. There's also the thing that you sent me. What is the name of the channel?
Oh, he's great. I don't have the name on top of my head.
We'll try and remember to put it.
We'll put it on screen and in the description.
Yeah. He's great. Proof in the pudding.
Yeah.
He made one video, got 400,000 views. Yes. That's damn impressive.
It's a great video on how to make a great thumbnail.
Yeah.
And so everyone's seeing your thumbnail, they'll see your title, and then what's important is that first 30 seconds of the video of fulfilling the promise of what they clicked on so they know what they're going to get, and then retaining and giving you like, okay, giving you that first 30 seconds of, okay, that's what I'm going to get out of this video. Now, mind you, the podcast realm, very different than a regular YouTube video or a short form content out there, because we have more of the luxury of this is long form and we don't have to edit our video in the first 30 seconds to go, bam, sham, wow, look at the new Sponge Daddy. Like, we don't have to do that.
Yeah.
So we kind of just put in a clip that's fun, but also represents the episode itself, then have our intro play. So it's very different with the podcast realm. So the way we do it is we're a lot less focused at getting those viral quick clips that, oh, this one's going to hit off today. Rather, it's a very slow grind building a long-term audience, but not just audience. It's our videos are long, so no one's going to click on us. Our videos aren't going to go viral is what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
So if you're looking at a video to go viral, it's going to be, there's other people to look at. We're just
shorter
saying
shorter the better. If you want a viral video, try and go shorter.
But also podcasts are, there's super successful podcasts out there.
Oh, yeah.
That
there are significant benefits to longer form videos.
Because then you can cut those clips down into 10-minute clips. You can cut those down into 30-second shorts.
We do that one.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about our short versus long form content? Then we can get into how do we do all these podcasts.
I think
as well.
We should go through step by step on the video creation process that we
fear. Okay.
Because I think a lot of people don't know. Like, they'll start with prepping for a video and then filming it, and then later coming up with a thumbnail and title. No.
Do you want to talk about what is the way we do it, Rich? What's the first thing we do that we learned to do over time, and this works for us great now?
First is a cool idea that we think would be both fun for us and also would be interesting to click on and would play well with what people would want to watch. First, the idea. Then we come up with a good title. We spend more time on our titles than a lot of other things.
The reason that idea is important is, hey, this idea is something that we want to do in the first place.
Yeah.
Sometimes we try to stretch and go like, I'm somewhat curious. I'll try it out. There's some ideas that we're not uber passionate about, but the idea portion is good because if you're going to make a video, try to make it something that you want to do. And then forming that idea into a title that, okay, this is what I want to do. How do I make it interesting for other people is that title.
That, and before you even sit down to record or prep it, it's not just, hey, what do I want to do? And then you go do it. It's, what do I want to do? How can I form this in a way that an audience would want to watch? That's an important step because you're putting this on the internet. It's not just for you. If it was just for you, you'd do it by yourself. But you're there for the internet, so try and instead of just doing what the internet wants, which it can be soul crushing, or just doing what you want to do. And if no one watches it, that can also be soul crushing. Figure out what you want to do and then put it in a different format. There's several examples.
Repackage it.
Exactly. There's plenty of videos that I don't know if I was particularly, kind of goes both ways, of a video that I was not particularly excited to do. It was more of, hey, this is a good idea for a YouTube video, is us reviewing ACOTAR. But I wasn't super excited to do it. But then we repackaged it in a very fun format
for
us to do. Now I think it's a great video and I'm excited to do it. We're now doing a half and half video of pitch review. You're pitching the video to me and then we properly review it. That's more fun. Vice versa happens all the time of, hey, this is a cool idea. I want to talk to you about this. But that's not really YouTube friendly.
Bro, what if I want to talk about, like, why are books getting long, Rich? Fuck that, right?
Yeah.
And we're like, wait a second. And then your mom gave us the idea of, she had a quote that basically said, why are books getting so goddamn long?
Yeah.
We're like, that's a great title.
Yeah.
And then going from there, kind of packaging it that way.
And so once you figure out the idea, how to format it to an audience, you spend the time on a good title.
Seeds we were talking about, is it a curious title, one that's giving,
does it demand to be clicked on? Is it asking a question where I gotta know the answer? Is it saying something so provocative or interesting, like, no, how could that person justify it? You're evoking some emotional reaction out of someone with your title. That's what you should try to almost always do. And the emotion doesn't have to just be anger or rage. It can be curiosity. It could be laughter. It could be hope. Like, there's a bunch of emotions to pull from, but you got to pull something to grab someone's attention.
The king of YouTube, Mr. Beast, I mean, he has these ridiculous, like, $10 million plane versus $1 plane or island or whatever. But you also know he fulfills it because that first 10 seconds of the video, he's actually showing you, like, oh, wait, that is a $100 million island. What?
Yeah.
So then you just have to see what he's got. We, in our production set, can promise you a very long discussion that you probably should have quit halfway through. But hey, we do it.
We deliver.
We deliver. We promise as much as we can deliver.
But yeah, then we go through the prepping process. Some videos take more prep than others. Then we film, edit, post, and then advertise, which we did a lot. You did a lot more of that early on. Do you want to go briefly into that?
Yes. Before diving into that, I just want to give the process for this video, for example. Could be a good set, that whole process we just talked about. The idea was, hey, the bookworm did that one thing about saying how she made a BookTube channel. That would be cool if we could talk about, maybe figure out how to make our BookTube channel. What was our journey? We want to talk about that. That could be helpful for people. Also, we kind of want to hash out our own ideas on that and prep for that video. Yeah. So we had that idea. Then our title was, we looked at other videos on the interwebs, like, oh, how did other people package this? We saw, oh, so we came up with the title.
Some of our previous titles was how we made a BookTube channel, how much $ we make on YouTube.
That probably would have been a good one.
Could have been a good one. Then thumbnails, ideas, and money on YouTube. Then we kind of came down to how we actually made a BookTube channel. Slight difference in the first one, but we went with that one. Then we thought on to
our thumbnail ideas. Like, so, hey, this is before we touched record. All this is before.
The thumbnail is currently not edited for this video, but we came up with the idea before it's done.
We took our picture before of what's going to be on the thumbnail.
Exactly. Yep. So have ideas of Austin sitting, or Austin blurred out with a YouTube ad revenue number, me doing some kind of hush face.
Yep.
Red and white being the main colors of the video. And so we kind of come up with ways, in all honesty, probably should do better at more details. That's probably something we could definitely improve on.
The thing is, too, we're not YouTube experts. This is how we do it, and we know there's better ways we'll improve. And next time we make a video like this, I'm sure we will. But like, for example, the title we chose, maybe we could have done better if it was like, we made blank on YouTube or something like that. We definitely, like, with our, you'll see a titles with our book reviews. It's spoiler-free review, but it's book title, spoiler-free and full review. That's not going for virality. That's not doing anything crazy.
There's not much we can do about that one either. We don't focus too much on those titles.
Yeah, and plus we just have those there for, hey, perpetuity. We have a review out there. That's, if anyone wants to look up a review, they use the search term for this book, ours could show up. Yeah. So it's a lot good for that. It's not that quick views, but it could be there long term. But yeah, so that's that process. Then we prep for the video for this. We kind of prep, what are all the things we want to talk about? So we had our categories was, okay, how do we start? What equipment do we use? Video creation process, editing video. Like, we just have bullet points of what's the big topics we want to go to for our video prep. Could be different for other BookTubers out there, have to write scripts. Other BookTubers out there might have to write out, okay, they have a top 10 list, so they have to figure out what their top 10 books are, and then they present those in a way that they prepared for. Then it comes to the posting and advertising end. So the posting and advertising, well, I would say at first, when we first created our channel, the toughest thing was to get some eyeballs out there. So one thing that helped majorly, at least when we began our channel, was short form content. Especially us having a podcast, ours was good. We had enough long hour and a half clips, sorry, long content that could be cut into clips that worked well in short form content. And that, whether if 1,000 people watched that short, maybe one or two then went to our long form stuff. And this a lot was on TikTok.
Early on, those one or two meant a lot.
It meant a ton.
I think at where we currently are, shorts are not nearly as important for our growth as it used to be. But early on, that was essential.
It was absolutely essential.
I think it was like half. At least half of our growth and half of our subscribers and viewers came from shorts.
Yeah, and who knows, the shorts could have propelled our long form so that we were shown more as well. I don't
oh,
know.
Oh, no, that's what I mean, is yeah. Where people came from are. Exactly. So the analytics showing where people came from are. Where did people click from our long form content? About half came from shorts.
Yeah,
so really early on.
Absolutely. Yeah, so that was essential. And on the other side, too, when we had when a new video would come out, whatever the topic was, let's say in our early days, we had a movie review. Mm-hmm. If it was The Northman, or if it was Last Duel, or we had a book review on The Way of Kings, we did something there. I would go on to Twitter, it was called Twitter at the time, and I would go on to Reddit. I would go on to all forums I could and basically do the search term for that movie, do the search term for that book, and DM those people like, hey, we actually just talked about this on our new podcast. And I would go around to hundreds of people a day and just sending them like a copied and pasted thing of check out our new channel. Probably got very few people.
We got banned on many of these.
We got banned on Reddit forums for doing that because I would, yeah. Well, yep. No, that was more so we would post our video on Reddit forums that were talking about these movies or something. And it would just be pure advertising. Yeah. Not the best way to go about it, but when we were just starting, we just needed to figure out, okay, how can we get some people, how can we build some sort of community here? Yeah. So that's how it began. Obviously, we don't do that. We stopped that. I think that was after like month two. But then you get enough of a platform that it works with itself and we use other avenues. But that's how we started with it. Because then there's the post-production side of BookTube, where all the editing side for us on the podcast is going to be, again, very different than for other BookTubers out there. Big thing is that first 30-second clip. Is it interesting? Okay, for the podcast process, I go through the whole podcast and look through, okay, how this used to go as well is while I'm watching the whole podcast is find, ooh, where would a good short form content be? Where would a good selection be of, ooh, that's a good thing that would probably do well, and just over time you get better at that. But it's a podcast. Mainly, it's cutting between wide frame, split screen frame, zooming on me, zooming on Rich, and finding a clip in there as I'm watching it that represents the pod and is like a fun thing to start with that becomes the introductory clip. That yeah. It's not more complex than that. It's just editing the podcast versus your other BookTubers out there. They have visuals and they have a lot more goes into
a lot more editing.
A lot more editing, but and a lot more prep, but the recording time's short for them. For us, the recording time's long and the edit's just going to take about twice as long as the actual pod episode is because just going through it.
Yeah.
So, and there's not much other than the retention rate is a big thing. So if you're looking to do your own BookTube channel, considering there's another thing about authenticity on BookTube too. What do you think about authenticity and making it not too corporate?
BookTube, I think more so than a lot of other like tech YouTubers or finance bros or what other else on YouTube. BookTube, I think, values authenticity and a little bit of raw honesty and not being too clean, not being too finely edited with lots of high energy action and like moving parts. Like, in many ways, I think that's a detractor for a BookTube community. I don't think that's not a hard rule, really. It's just a feeling. I feel like this community values just a little bit more amateur stuff. Like they want just people talking about books.
Yeah.
That's not really complicated.
Yeah, it's again, we're talking two very different things here of you're going into this for a hobby. You don't need to do anything super corporate or fancy. We mentioned Mr. Beast just because you're on YouTube. You're doing that thumbnail game if you're trying to do that. You don't have to. None of this is a have to do. And you can very much get away with having a great, successful channel. And success, again, could be 100 subscribers, could be 1,000 subscribers. We went and collabed with Beard of Darkness, who his whole niche on his channel, he has several hundred subscribers, but he has this great niche where he gets indie authors to come on his channel. He chats with indie authors. He gets this opportunity he never would have if he didn't have a channel. That's
fantastic.
More successful than we are in many regards, because our goal is to get Sanderson, and we've yet to do that. So it's just determine what it is for you, and you don't have to make this a big numbers game. You don't have to stress out about all of these things, but if you have certain goals like we do, like, hey, we do think about the thumbnails. We do think about the titles. How can we improve incrementally and all these things, because we want to get better and better in those regards. But again, if that's one of the things that bothers you more, or it's not something you're super excited about, try to improve it as much as you can. Just know that we're getting back to that one thing we said is you don't deserve to get people to watch you. You're not owed everybody's attention and time.
If you're putting in work into it and you're not seeing the results you want to see, it's on you to improve or accept what you have.
Exactly. That's the main thing, because you can't go out there and be like, why don't people want to watch this video where I talked about an hour about art, objectivity and subjectivity in art. There's a reason that did bad, Rich.
It did poorly, but you know what? I had a lot of fun.
I loved that time. I actually think it's doing better over time, too. I think the numbers are going up, but who cares? We loved it.
That has been the healthiest thing for our video process. Is I think we have a great mix of we do videos that we know people want to see, and then we do a good mix of videos that people want to see and we want to do. And then occasionally, we just do videos we want to do and we know it's going to do terrible. No one wants to watch it, but we don't care. We want to do it anyway.
Yeah.
Just to get it out of our system, and we feel good about it.
Yep. It's a weird game, I'll say this is. It's a weird game because there's balancing between creativity and business, essentially. With Sanderson, sure. Sanderson does it the best. He is both a creative who writes amazingly, but also created a business out of his writing. Mm-hmm. So finding that balance for the two. Because talking about it being a business, Rich, is it time to discuss the money?
Yeah. Before, though, do you want to give a few quick tips on shorts? Because I think you have a great insight, and someone... they're just starting out. What should they look for in creating a short? What's the important thing?
So for short form content, this is TikTok, YouTube shorts, anything like that. We have a podcast, so we're able to clip down shorts that can work better than maybe it. Here's what I'll say is you might have to make your short from scratch, meaning you have to film the short yourself, or what we do, we never film the short separately. It is just we take something from the podcast we already talked about and then cut that down in the short form process. But shorts were a big factor of why our channel got bigger than it has been. Bigger than we deserved. It just that's what fueled a lot of the growth, especially early on. The important thing with a short, the first thing is in the first couple seconds, creating a premise or saying something in the short form content that is interesting enough to keep people engaged. Whereas it's positing a question or it's saying something that is familiar. So if I started the short by saying, the keyboard that I like to use when I am doing is already too long. If it's short form content, you could change that up by just doing, hey, one recent one that's doing amazing, we have a shorts editor now, is the first words we said were, Tolkien hates Dune. Tolkien hates Dune is, oh, wait.
Short.
That immediately great. You go, okay, why does Tolkien hate Dune? I now need to find out more so people are more retained. So this very clear engagement that's going on. So Tolkien hates Dune, and then you want to watch the rest of it. The next important thing is in that short to create a full, complete story where you answer the question, or it creates, it finishes the arc. It doesn't end at a point where it cuts off before the laugh, or cuts out before the answer, or cuts off before whatever it might be. At least for our podcast and our shorts, that will do better if we're doing a if the short's on a book review, maybe a Red Rising one. Over a million views on TikTok was just me going, Red Rising is the shit, and then here's what it's about. Darrow, and it was just basically giving a pitch about Red Rising in a minute that convinced people to read Red Rising.
Yeah.
Or one was a Lord of the Rings short that we had where it that went, got like 6.5 million views on TikTok and some million on YouTube shorts or whatever it was, 1-2. And that was just, I think the words I said, again, it's that first couple seconds, what words are you using? And also, here's an important thing, is don't be fake about it. Because the clips that we're taking here, like I was obsessed with Red Rising and Lord of the Rings is one of our favorite things. So that genuine enthusiasm will come off in doing something that...
Yeah, you could fake it, but why bother? There's not much of a point. Just actually do something you're more passionate about. When we're talking about stuff here, we actually do care. I'm not going to really put on airs and scream about something that I don't care about for views. And not the reason is not entirely because that's not a good thing to do. That's not it. The main reason is that doesn't work.
Right.
I don't look the same when I'm being inauthentic. I'm not that good of an actor. So it's better to just, when you see actual authenticity, like an authentic laugh, it's different. And I could tell when, I still remember that time when we were laughing up at the Lord of the Rings theories.
Yeah.
Like the stupid ones. Like it wasn't even real theories. It was just like stupid crackpot.
Like Gandalf theories. Is an alcoholic.
Yeah, exactly. That was genuine, like laughing tears. Yeah. Just how you present it was just so funny, especially the context of going from a serious theory to like just stupid Gandalf as an alcoholic. We were genuinely laughing, and that came across in the short, I think, pretty clearly of like, oh, these guys are actually laughing. It's not, it's not a canned laugh. It's not fake.
Right. And I hate the word, I hate that phrase, fake it till you make it. I don't think that's good advice. I don't abide by that, because if you're faking something to make it, the thing you make it will be something you never wanted to attain in the first place. If you have to fake it to get there, I think someone smarter than me said this, I'm sure, but if you're chasing an opportunity rather than chasing a dream, like if you see BookTube as this opportunity to get something out of it, like, yes, we get benefits out of it as we discussed with the pros.
There are opportunities, but it's not just an opportunity to obtain. It's a privilege to be able to do, and it comes with opportunities.
Yeah,
but that's not the primary.
It's very fulfilling is one thing. If you're finding fulfillment out of it and something, it's dipping into your passion. That's much better than if you're just chasing something, like you're going to Gold Rush. And you think anybody going to California for gold was like, oh, I can't wait to dig gold in those trenches. We are not the hard...
If we wanted to chase YouTube reviews, we definitely wouldn't have picked books.
Yeah.
That would not have been the choice.
And again, this mentality that we're having on this isn't like business 101 advice. This isn't how to go out there and like, sell, go ahead and market your next squeegee. I don't know why I keep saying squeegee and sponge daddies. It's just on my mind. I just look at you and think that. That's the other running bit we have that I really got to stop doing, because I'm getting pissed off that I'm doing it.
Yeah.
It's just right there. It's lobbed up. I've just seen a lot of comments about you call you the, you've seen those comments, right?
Which ones?
Never mind.
Oh, I missed them. I been skipping on some comments?
Yeah. You're glad that you didn't read some of those. No, a lot of the comments are saying great things. No, they're great things, but in a sexual way.
Oh.
They're taking sexual advances at you, Rich.
Oh. I'm glad I don't read all of them. I read many, but
not those. I'll shield you from them.
my good selective memory. I choose to look at it probably and then forget it.
That is probably it.
I have a great selective memory.
It's fantastic.
I don't have to remember things. No. It's great. I've watched movies with jump scares and surprise endings and been surprised every time. I just choose to be present in the movie. And me present in the movie, there was no previous watch. There's only the now. And
holy so it's surprising. Shit. Holy shit. Darth Vader is his father.
I know. What?
Just the biggest reveals.
It's great.
That is nice. Especially with books because there's so much to forget.
Oh, yeah.
Because I bet you remember 1% of Wave Kings.
Oh, probably.
I bet you.
It's been a while.
That's 1,200 pages. How many pages do you think you actually remember? You think you remember 100 pages?
I remember two things from Shallon's chapters.
Okay. Fair point. Okay, so that is the crux of the short form content, just going, hey, we're getting down to, if you want to actually get that engagement, that's part of it.
First 2 seconds. Tell a whole story, add pictures, and
The subtitles are great.
End at the right time. Don't let it stretch too long because retention's important where all of these, again, it's an algorithm, but the companies want to see people watch the whole thing. So if you make the video too long and people are cutting off, like maybe you have a great video, but people are only watching 3/4 of it, that would negatively affect it. So making sure you end it just the right time is important.
Yes. And the way we do it is we take more effort into our shorts and making those very retention grabbing, while our podcasts, we're just having a conversation. We're not trying to make this, you're an hour and 10, 15, whatever minutes into this podcast. We're not trying to pull you in with a, here's the next squeegee. I told you that's still on my mind, Rich. What the fuck is it with the squeegee?
I don't know.
That's the retention grabbing thing is, when am I going to mention squeegee the fourth time?
Oh, yeah. That's what people want
to
know.
That's pulling them into the end. They don't want to find out how much money we make on here.
Let's get into that.
Okay. So the money thing is, when our first year, $0. Negative dollars because
negative money.
The equipment, the expenditures on equipment is more than the money we make out of it. Today, you know, I'll pull up right now, just see what was our last 30 days of YouTube ad revenue. Is that okay?
Go ahead.
Okay. Our last 30 days of YouTube ad revenue for Tutor Ramble, the date is June 5th, 2024. We made on the dot $569.58 for that month for YouTube ad revenue. And we gained 1.4 thousand subscribers. And I'll take a screenshot so I can post this up here. 1.4 thousand subscribers in the past month with almost 30,000 watch time hours and 568,000 views. Mind you, the views are split between short form and long form content. So
we get more views on short form than we do long form.
Absolutely. And from that revenue that we get, that you could see in that $570, you can look at our revenue and see that it's not just from videos that we're posting this month, but it's the revenue that trickles over from all of our videos that we've ever posted in our history. We're on episode in the 130s now. So it's revenue that's coming
cumulative.
It's revenue coming from the very beginning. So if it's just on video to video, our actual videos, let me pull up a video that we recently put that got an average amount of views for us. Our 5 Reasons Escapism is Great and Awful has 4.4 thousand views right now, which is a decent measure of how much we get after about a week's time or so. Mm-hmm. And that video made $20.68. So a long form podcast where we're getting multiple ads, we're getting beginning, mid-roll, and post ads that has basically 4.5 thousand views makes basically $20. On YouTube ad revenue. So the YouTube ad revenue is going to be...
This is a lesson for YouTubers, and other people have said this before, but if you're looking to make money on YouTube, if money's the goal, you're not going to make it in ad revenue. You should almost consider it, just mark it off. Don't even consider YouTube ad revenue as an actual money-making source. Shouldn't. It is a platform for you to sell other things, if you can think of, and providing value to more people. It's an audience. That's it. Figure out a way to monetize an audience. Don't focus on the ad revenue.
Absolutely. And same goes for, we have TikTok ad revenue. We have these other, we have Red Circle, our Spotify and Apple podcasts. The exact numbers are that these are going to be close. TikTok's roughly a couple hundred bucks. And Spotify, Apple is anywhere from 100 to 150.
Yeah.
So it's all that's just from the plain ads that are going out there that YouTube and all these platforms are putting out there to people. And keep in mind, if you're not doing a podcast, if you're just doing a BookTube channel,
it's going
to
be way worse.
It's going to be lower, because 4,000 views for a 10-minute video is, you're getting a lot less ads in there than in a full hour plus long podcast. So our ad revenue is actually probably higher for our view count.
Also, we, because we have a long form content, not only do we have more ads, I believe our ads are, we have a higher rate than typical.
Probably.
I took a quick look. Okay. So shorter form videos have a, you get paid less per ad. We get paid more per ad. And we have more ads.
Yes.
So we get paid pretty well for ad revenue for our views.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
So your mileage may vary.
It will absolutely vary. But that's, this is just from our experience. This is all we could speak from. And so again, if you're trying to make money on YouTube or money in BookTube space, it has to come from outside of just the YouTube ad revenue itself. For us, were you about to say something there?
Best thing is, write a book and then use the platform to sell your book. If people like your ideas and like your thoughts on books, good chance they may like your actual book.
Actually, a perfect example of this is Jed Hearn, who we just collabed with, and the video is either up or will be up shortly. Jed Hearn has a fantastic writing advice YouTube channel with over 70,000 subscribers, where what his monetization strategy is, he provides writing advice and has these cool things he loves to get into, like world building advice is the thing we did on our channel. He goes into plots, he goes into characters, he does everything to do with how to write a fantasy sci-fi book, mainly a fantasy book. Mm-hmm. And he coaches writing and edits other books for a living via his YouTube platform, which, hey, he loves writing, he loves giving advice for this. So people see his advice and then go, oh, this is a good guy to get advice from. Let me join his writing boot camp, where he gives lessons, one-on-one lessons, or does any of this. And now he has me talking about it, advertising for him. It's so great. Where Jed Hearn's a great value. Check him out. Fantastic guy.
There's also Brian Lee Durfee. He advertises books on his YouTube channel as well. Mm-hmm. By the way, he seems to be improving, but definitely should go over and support him. He went through some terrible stuff medical-wise. He has a great channel. Go and support him and see if you can support any to his Kickstarter as well.
Absolutely.
His GoFundMe.
Yes, absolutely. I saw a recent video. He is improving.
Yes.
Yes, awesome. So that, to as far as money goes on YouTube, use something else outside of that if you're looking to eventually make money on this. And again, if you're at the end of the video here, like, the money should not be the first thing you're thinking about, because
there is a reason why we put it last.
At the end, because to get there, like, we're a couple years in, and we're...
Honestly, it's fairly recent. It's when the within the past six-ish months, then we've been able to actually think, oh, we should actually start thinking more about money.
Yes. So now the way we make more money is off of YouTube itself. We have one Patreon, which is the bulk of our money. Mm-hmm. Because Patreon consistently gives us X number of members, and you could check out our Patreon right now to join it as well. But our patrons are the number one reason we actually are able to funnel this thing through and make this more than just a hobby. So All you guys, thank you so much. So we can check out our Patreon, which is one way we get money, and then our merch as well. We have a merch site on tutorramble.com, which that's more recent, so that's past couple months or so. Yeah. And we sell like bookmarks and shirts and all sorts of stuff on there.
That is definitely a fairly easy way for YouTubers to make money. We made the mistake of buying inventory.
Yeah. Lots Therefore, of inventory.
I don't think we've made money yet.
No, I think we're a loss on merch.
We're still on definitely a loss.
Yeah.
But we that's don't... Because, thing
here's
is,
the thing.
We could have made the money decision.
Wait, Rich, should we preface this?
We deliberately
this?
Didn't make the
we
money
We should
decision.
Preface this with Rich and I don't think money's real.
No, it's not.
It's not real.
It's a number on a screen that gets you things you want.
It means nothing. We're talking about money for those of you who do believe it exists.
Exactly.
For us, we were looking at this project of merch and went, oh, how cool if we got like the best bookmark ever. And What if we designed it at the right plastic place rather than these cheap paper ones? And then we
we could have gone down the avenue of, hey, there are these print-on-demand shops that do bookmarks. We could pay artists to design it, and they would print on these, you know, paper bookmarks that were all crap. And it's only on one side. It's not both sides. And that looked lame. And we didn't that.
No.
And we're like, but we want to make cool, good bookmarks. And we spent a lot of time trying to figure out the only way to do that is we would have to design it. And we sent out our designs to this plastic printer shop that does a lot of stuff for like Comic-Con, conventions, a bunch of other stuff. And they make a lot of the menus. They're a professional company that does printing on plastic. And we had to buy 2,000 bookmarks. Yeah, that's expensive.
We have thousands of them.
We have thousands of bookmarks.
We have lots of them.
And we're couple grand in the hole on those because we wanted them to be cool. We wanted to sell the cool bookmarks.
Look at the smiles on our faces. We're so happy with them.
Oh, yeah, they're it's awesome. Great time. They're actually good.
They're great.
Honestly, quality of material-wise, they're as good as Sanderson's and stuff. Like, they're...
I love it.
They're as good as you're going to find.
Yeah. And it's lovely.
We save money on shipping. Like, I went through all the work of like, oh, we could send it to a warehouse. No.
Oh, let's also make that easy for them. We use Fourth Wall for merch. If you guys ever want to do merch on YouTube, just go to Fourth Wall. They do it great. We
pay some artists, go on Instagram, find some artists, talk with them, pay them what they're worth, and then upload the designs on Fourth Wall and print it. That is a very affordable way to sell merch.
Absolutely. And there's ways you can actually make more money on it. We combine some of our passion and just not caring as much about the money in some regards for that, which it's a balance when it gets into the money stuff. So just be aware of all that. So merch is one thing we do as other revenue. The Patreon is another big one. And actually a lot of other booktubers, I won't say their names in case you don't want, but we've had 3 booktubers now, bigger booktubers, come to us, and we've talked in one-on-one calls, two-on-ones, because unfortunately you're there, but we talk in two-on-one calls with them, and they're asking us how we got our Patreon to be as big as it is for our channel size as well. And so the big thing that we're discussing, and Jed Hearn, how Jed Hearn was able to create his channel, and he quit his job completely to do editing for books and using his YouTube platform to monetize himself. What we did with our Patreon is we said, oh, what can we provide value to that we'd also want to do? And what we came up with was a book club where we could have a monthly book club with viewers of ours who like our book reviews, who also want to chat about books with us. And it was something we could provide that someone would also want to pay for. So it's the best of both worlds where...
Often it is better to provide something of value than just asking for charity. There's a reason why, like, people have asked us, oh, why don't you have like a $1 tier on Patreon for people who just want to support you? We kind of don't want to do that. I would much rather we get support by providing something of value. We provide videos free with ads, but that's the value. If we can do something that people want, we will take their money. But don't really want to do more of a charity thing.
Yeah, like the $1 to have like names at the end of the video type thing.
We don't see much value in that, so we don't offer it.
Yeah, so it's just, again, it's our philosophy on things. So you can do it how you'd like, but that's how we take it. We just go, we want to provide something. And the book club, we think we provide a lot of value there. We put a lot of work into the Patreon, into the Discord, into the book clubs themselves, and that is the thing that we're happiest with our entire BookTube journey. So
best part about it, and I think this was the secret to it, a community is, maybe people will disagree with this, but exclusivity really makes a community a little bit better. So the fact that our Patreon and our exclusive Discord is behind a $10 paywall, it means the people that are come into it are really, they really care. They're willing to pay $10 a month to join.
Absolutely.
That raises the bar and the barrier to entry that every single person in there cares. And we don't get a lot of spammers. We don't get a bunch of people that just pop in to troll. So we don't have really any trolls in our channel.
Right.
Other than like actually good-hearted, fun people. But like,
Salty's a troll.
Salty's a bit of a troll. But but no, we have people that are serious there. People genuinely care to be there and want to get their value out of. They don't want to ruin the community that they spent $10 to be there. So ironically, I think we have a much stronger community by limiting it, by making a pretty substantial paywall.
100%. 100%.
So I just see like a bunch of the free Discords or the Discord that maybe costs $1 to join. There's a lot of people in there that don't really care that much, and they could ruin the server by making it just more of a hostile environment. So that's our perspective on it, at least, and our experience.
Yeah, and we provide something of value, and it's something that we'd also want to do. And the crux of it is, if you're making your channel and want to make revenue out of it, what other thing beyond the free advertisement on your channel can you make and can you provide? And figuring out what that is, because it's going to be different for everybody. Because for, again, for Jed Hearn, it was editing people's books. For us, it's
for Brian Lee Durfee, it's advertising his book.
Yep.
For us, it's our book club, and we want to do more and to figure out new things that we can provide value to other people. And ultimately, I mean, that's basic business. Don't try and figure out a scam or like, how can I just take people's money and not give them much in return? Figure out what is the most you can do for someone else and then monetize it.
And hey, if you don't think you can provide anything and you're just a vapid hack, you can always just take sponsors. Sponsors are the last thing, and they make significantly more money than any YouTube ad revenue ever will. And anytime there's a sponsorship, here's a little tip. We can't reveal any money we've made from sponsors. Our Patreon, you can just go to our Patreon and see what we make on there. And you see our YouTube ad revenue. For merch, we make a couple $100 a month from it now. The first month of it was a big chunk. But again, we haven't made our money back from that. But you can see from our sponsors, we can't reveal actual contracts. But I can...
Important tip. Don't pick up just any sponsor. Actually, your reputation and your credibility matters way more than whatever money they're about to give you. Because it only takes one bad sponsorship to destroy your credibility.
Yep.
And it should be worth a lot more than however much money they offer you.
We have been I can't tell you how many times we have been offered money from authors to review their book or to just say, hey, read this book. Yeah. And good money.
Yeah.
And we will not do that for a book we haven't read, and we don't do a paid advertisement for a book because it's not authentic. We value our credibility and our honor more than we do that, whatever that money is. Hey, then again, we've never been offered $20,000 to do that.
We'll see. Our values could be tested.
It could be tested. Our conviction is just based on these low ball four figures. So there, you never know. But still, that's where you have to have some conviction and what you'll actually advertise. And hey, how much would you sell your soul for, essentially?
And do your research on the company that is asking to sponsor you and see are they a company that's worth sponsoring?
Always do
you like their product? Ask for samples first. Don't just take it. For example.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Display. We genuinely like Display. It's actually a good product. I have it in my house. But we asked first.
Yeah.
I used the product before the advertisement. And then when they sent us some new stuff, I was like, oh, that's really neat. I like this. Okay. I can advertise it. That's fine. And I can sleep easier at night. I don't feel slimy afterward. Because it's like, I'm advertising a product I got in my own house. Okay.
You can sleep at night.
Yeah,
that's fine. Next, your Display using code TutorRamble.
Yeah, they're still sponsoring us.
Yeah.
We haven't done, I can't remember the last time we did
that. It's coming soon. They'll be there. Thanks, Display. You're the best.
They're always great.
But another thing with sponsors is walking into, it's very hard to find advice on how much money you should take from sponsors. Go ahead, Rich. Say it.
Here's a good rule of thumb. If you send them a number and they just say, A-okay, that sounds good to me, you ask too little. we that happened a couple of times.
We thought we sent a huge number once, and it was a huge number.
Yeah.
And they responded, yep. I ran to Rich. I said, what the fuck?
We fucked up.
I don't know.
We should have asked for more.
The number was there, and we basically quadrupled it just to be like, hey, you know what? It's going to be a lot of work. and we like it. We'll do it, but it's going to be a lot of work, and I think we're worth more. I'll highball it, then they'll lowball us. We'll meet somewhere in the middle. They met the highball. And so just when it comes to that sponsorship, don't undervalue what you're worth, especially because the sponsors reaching out to you have a marketing budget. But beyond that, what you're providing to them is a, look, you're listening to us at the hour 30-something mark. You obviously enjoy something about us. And
the ad going out to the people who are watching us an hour 30 in on display, that ad is worth way more, a lot more than a Facebook ad or some ad roll on a YouTube generated ad roll.
Someone that a viewer knows sponsoring a product saying to, hey, buy this, do this, is a lot more than just a random stranger.
Yeah.
So it's some connection letter. So sponsors really do value you saying, hey, do our thing here. Way more, you'll find numbers all over the place online. The only thing I can say is look to your, I don't even know a good rule of thumb, like this to this number.
I don't know if there really is.
There's just no magic number.
Ask your peers, look online, see what it is. I think constantly ask for more in the sense of you get a new sponsor. Like, don't break a contract, but you get a new sponsor, ask for more than you asked last time. And if they're really quick and just say agree, you know, next time I'm going to ask for a lot more. And you'll know how much you're worth when several people say, hey, that's too much, I'm willing to spend this. Well, then there you go. Now you found your number. That's how you work in a job. So if you're if you're finding a job and your prospective hire asks you, hey, how much do you want to make? What's your number? And you give them a number, they go, yeah, we can make that work. You ask for too little. Way too little. I've made that mistake before. You walk out of the room like, damn it.
That's not negotiation, that's capitulation. There's a difference.
No, so if there was no negotiation, you lowballed yourself.
Yeah, so it's difficult to say, hey, from our perspective now to what we would do when our channel is much smaller, it's constantly changing, and it really just it depends is a bad answer, other than you're probably going too low. Of whatever number you're thinking, it's probably higher is a good rule of thumb.
Probably worth more.
Yeah. And so I think we dove as deep as we can right now into BookTube.
I think so.
And our experience.
If you have questions, pop them out in the comments. I will. Both of us will be looking for them a little bit more particularly than other videos. We'll try and answer as many comments as we can. Questions about YouTube and about BookTube specifically. We'll see what we can do to help in the comments below.
And if you made it to the end of the video, say 4 P's.
4 P's.
4 P's.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. And another, I know we've mentioned it a lot today, but this channel's functioning a lot to our patrons. So thank you. We joke a lot. Thank you. It's great.
They say, not single-handedly, because there's many hands there, but they have made this whole process so much more fun and enjoyable than it ever would have been.
Yep.
That if it was just us and there were no patrons, this would be a significantly worse experience. I value them highly in this.
Yeah.
It's the best thing that we've gotten out of doing
the YouTube. Perseverance part and the P would have been a lot harder.
Oh, yeah. Now it's, yeah, making content, a lot of it is not just for money or for you anymore. It's now I want to do something that they will enjoy.
And that's for you guys. Thank you so much. And thanks for watching this video. We'll see you next time on going back to our normal videos.
Yeah.
We had a fun time. Hope you did too. Bye, everybody.
Bye, y'all.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.